This is the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast, episode 130. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show focused on everything in fantasy and sci-fi books, from epic fantasy to urban fantasy. We have space opera, pure sci-fi, swords and sorcery, you name it, we've got it all here, and you can expect to find the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the book world here on the show. And we'll, of course, occasionally add some other special guests along the way. Starting off things this week, I have wrapped up the first draft of Paramedics Amazon, book 8 in my Extreme Medical Services series. Now comes the edits and rewrites, so we can get it ready to send off to my editor. There's a lot going on in this book, and I have to cover a lot of ground in those rewrites, but it's going to be coming together pretty quickly here, I think. You can check out what I'm up to all the time if you want to find out what's going on. I put up sneak peeks of upcoming covers, special giveaways, a lot more, all over in the reader group over on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. That's a place where I talk about all kinds of fantasy books. We share what we're reading from other authors. We share our favorite fantasy and sci-fi movies. You can check all that out over at Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers on Facebook. Also, you can always check in over at my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. Joining us this week on the show is Justin Lee Anderson. Justin spent 15 years as a professional writer and editor before his debut novel, Carpe Diem, which was published in 2015. It became a bestseller and won a 2018 Audie Award. Since 2018, he's been writing full-time, working alongside on scripts with his wife, Juliet, who he met through a BBC scriptwriting contest. They live just outside his hometown of Edinburgh, with their Brady Bunch family of 5 kids. We talk about his book, The Lost War, book 1 in the Iden series, and you can check that out over on his site, which I'll have linked in the show notes for this episode. But let's go ahead and jump on into that chat with Justin. Justin, welcome to the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast. It's really a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thanks very much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself to the readers in our audience? Let them know a little bit about who you are.
Sure. Okay. I'm Justin Lee Anderson. I was a professional writer and editor across a lot of different media for about 15 years before I published my first book. Which was comedy fantasy Carpe Diem, which first came out back in 2015. That did really well, and one thing led to another, and I have eventually ended up now, thankfully, writing full-time. And my second book, The Lost War, which is the first in a trilogy called Eden, was published last year.
Excellent. That's the one we're going to be primarily talking about, although I do want to talk about your first book as well. It seems like it, like you said, it was very well received, and I'm curious how you shifted gears and what's different between the two of them. But let's jump in and talk a little bit about The Lost War. I confess I haven't had a chance to get started reading it yet. It is on my to-be-read list. But it seems very interesting, and I was intrigued by something you said in your questionnaire you filled out before the podcast, basically saying that you drew a lot of information from, you live in Edinburgh, and you talked about how you drew upon the history, the mythology, and the etymology of Edinburgh. Why don't you explain to me what you meant by that?
Very much so. So what I did, I wanted to write something set in a sort of, you know, pseudo medieval fantasy kingdom, but I wanted to base it on Edinburgh, my hometown. I have quite an unusual relationship with Edinburgh. I was born here, but then I grew up in America for a lot of my childhood, and only moved back here in my teens. And so we used to come back here for family holidays a lot in the summers. And coming from coming from sort of an American city to a Scottish city like Edinburgh, especially one that has, you know, a medieval castle and a volcano right in the middle of it, it felt like going back in time. And it just felt really magical to me. And so it always seemed like this amazing place. And so when I finally moved back here, I just really loved it. It always felt like home. I've moved away a few times for different reasons, but I've always ended up back here. And so I think I just have a slightly different perspective on Edinburgh from most Edinburghers, I suppose. And so, as I say, I wanted to write this story based on the city. One of the jobs I did when I was before I was published was I used to write and edit a guidebook to Edinburgh. And in doing that, I had researched a lot of the history of the city. And so I knew a fair bit about it. I knew a lot of the sort of famous old tales and some of the stories about ghosts. And Edinburgh just has loads of mythology like that. And it's just a really rich vein of stuff to draw on. But the thing about the etymology was what I decided to do was find out where all the area names in Edinburgh had come from and what the history was that went behind them. And so I literally sat down with a notebook and got on Google and started trying to look up any information I could find about what the origins of the Edinburgh place names were. And once I did that, it gave me names for different towns within the country of Eden, but also some of them actually contributed to the storyline. So, for example, there's an area of called Balerno, just outside of Edinburgh, and the original name for that is my Gaelic pronunciation is terrible, but I think it's Baileannaigh, and that translates as, if I remember rightly, something like place of the hawthorns. Now, hawthorn bushes have white flowers with thorns. And I had a notion that I wanted to have a sort of a religious order of knights within the story somewhere because there's a character that I wanted to fit into that. And so Baileannaigh became the home of the holy order of the white thorn. So that literally was, you know, hey, I've created a whole thing out of the etymology of this name. And that's just one example of that. So the whole country of Eden is built on the foundations of Edinburgh's history.
That's fascinating, and it's great to write about something where you live or you're passionate about or a place you visited. I write quite a bit about the area of I live in and around the Baltimore area in Maryland, and I write quite a bit of my stories based either in Baltimore or nearby. And just because I'm familiar with the area, and of course I go and I do my research back, you know, in the measly 300 years or so. I can't imagine having the rich history that you have to draw upon somewhere where, you know, it's had a historical background dating back, you know, more than a millennia is just fascinating to me.
Yeah, there's just so much. And the thing is, you know, I mean, we've got all these sort of, you know, massive festivals and everything here as well. And that one of the things I love about Edinburgh is that for all the history that we've got, it's actually a very cosmopolitan modern city as well. And so you get both sides of things. You get the history and you get the contemporary. It's a very global city, I think. You know, because we get so many tourists, there are, of course, guides who will go around, you know, it's one of the reasons I did the guidebook that I did. There are guides who will go around and tell you stories. And I've actually got on a few of them. And there's Mary King's Close is essentially a street that exists underneath the high street. And it was blocked off for plague and built over the top of. And people were just left to die in there. And it was I was well into my adulthood before I ever went down there. And it's just fascinating. It's kind of city where it's fun to sometimes go and do the tourist things because you learn about things in your own city that you just wouldn't have known.
That's amazing. And how much fun that must be for you to kind of delve into that and have just that new appreciation for where you are to bring that into the story in some ways. It's got to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love it. I love the city. And just being able to build that, and other things as well. Like a lot of the inns in the story in the Lost War are real pubs. Some of them still exist. Some of them are, you know, hundreds of years old. The oldest pub in Edinburgh is claimed to be a little pub in Duddingston called the Sheep Heat, which is apparently named after a silver tobacco tin given to the owners by James VI. So that pub's been around for a very long time, and it's fun just, you know, getting to know that history and taking these pubs that were actually around hundreds of years ago and throw them into my pseudo medieval story.
Wow, just a lot of fun. Now, the main character is Aranach. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's right. Yeah, Aronoff. Yeah.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit about him and how you kind of came upon him as the main protagonist.
The very straightforward answer is he was my character in a role playing game that friends and I have played for a long time, a lot of years.
Good. I'm not the only one that does that.
And so there are. I mean, I think I did a count of 8 of the main characters. Including all of the point of view characters in The Lost War, were originally characters who were role played in that long running game. Aronoff was mine. I make no bones about the fact that I took my character and wrote him in as the main character. A lot of authors do that. You know, you write yourself into the story, obviously. And he's not even vaguely exactly like me. But he is my character from that. And so I wanted to do something with him. And there was stuff I wanted to do. In terms of sort of commentary on society and politics and things like that. And one of the things I brought in was the idea that in Eden, it is a society that is kind of bigoted against Drowi, which is the Gaelic word for druid or wizard. And that's what the mages are called in my world. And so he is the first Drowi ever to reach the position of king's envoy. Having helped to take the country in a rebellion away from a very unpopular previous king. But he's had an interesting upbringing because he's had a wealthy upbringing, but at the same time, he was a Drowi, so he's experienced a lot of prejudice as well. And he's very conflicted. He's the kind of person who wants to do the right thing, but he's also quite angry about the life experience he's had. He's angry about people's treatment of him and other Drowi. And so he's quite a conflicted character.
What about the magic system? Is it based upon druidic magic? The idea of more nature-based magical system, or have you brought in other things to supplement that?
So the way I've defined the magical system is sort of based on some of the role-playing systems, but not really. The way I've defined it is that drows are born with an innate ability to perform one type of magic. With Aronoff, it's called Earth Magic. It's kind of elemental magic plus. So he has elemental magic powers, but he also has powers of telekinesis and light off the top of my head. So it's similar to that. But there are other powers. For example, common powers that people exhibit are nature, where they have control over, you know, plants and trees and such. There are physic drows who have the ability to increase their own strength and speed and physical properties. There are metamorphs who can transform into other creatures. So there are a lot of different, sort of like a class in the role play sense, but not really. And of course the two sort of, you know, the dark powers, as they're often considered, of necromancy and demon summoning. And those are the powers that, are wielded by the big bad in this story.
You know, with role-playing games being such a staple, I think, among a lot of fantasy authors, I hear more and more fantasy authors bringing aspects of some of their campaigns or their long-running games into their stories in some way. And I think it makes a good bit of sense to me. I mean, I've been playing role-playing games since I was 10. When I actually have somewhere in this house an original set of the 3 paperback Dungeons & Dragons books that are pretty much the original set. I bought them. I remember buying them at the hobby shop in my town, hometown, and taking them home and just digging into them. But when you do that, and you play those games, you get a sense of story in a very personal way. Mm-hmm. I feel like you get mm-hmm. a sense for what works and doesn't work. And you get a sense for that, the value of that surprise answer, either from the GM mm-hmm. or something you say to the GM that catches them by surprise. It just, you know, talk a little bit about how that has influenced your writing.
It definitely has. I mean, sort of being immersed in those kind of worlds. For the longest time, I've played with one particular friend of mine who has GM'd our games, and he creates these really interesting worlds that you do find yourself kind of feeling immersed in, and there's a history and a depth to them that, you know, you can go poking around and you will find things. It's not like one of these sort of computer RPGs where there's a path you kind of have to follow. You can go play an open world scenario when you're basically basing it on somebody else's imagination, and that's a lot of fun. And so definitely I think my desire to create a world which had depth to it, and you know, that there were little details of things that would hint at a larger world beyond the storyline, were definitely something I wanted to include. I think maybe what's possibly the most direct influence in terms of role-playing, beyond the characters themselves, but in terms of role-playing that affected my writing, was actually something I had to get over. And that was actually in writing fight scenes, because my instinct, of course, was to write a fight scene detailing what everybody was doing, because that's how you experience a battle in role play. You know, it's the turn-based system, so you always know what everybody's doing. And at first I was trying to sort of talk about what everybody was doing, and they were clunky and they didn't work, and I found it really difficult. And it was actually I credit Anna Smith Spark for setting me right on this. I saw her talk at FantasyCon on how to write fight scenes, and she gave us great advice. She basically said, you know, you don't try to write the whole thing. Pick a person, write the story from their perspective still, same as you would any other part. You write the fight from their perspective. What are they seeing? What are they experiencing? What are they feeling? What are they going through while it's going on? Completely went back and rewrote all of my fight scenes, and they flowed so much better. They were much more, readers really seemed to connect with them much more. And so that was great advice, but that was something I actually had to get away from because of the role play route.
Yeah, that I can see exactly what you're talking about. And I think what helped me a lot was when I went to college, I studied film and video production, and, you know, started seeing things through the camera's eye much more. And I think it mm-hmm. helped me get through that a little bit, to help see scenes from a cinematic angle. And so my mm-hmm. fight scenes go that direction.
Sure. Yeah. Fights are a difficult thing to write. It's a difficult thing to describe a fight and get across the threat and the excitement and the action, and not have it become almost like a dance manual of who put what where and what arm was where and who swung when. It's a really easy thing to get wrong, and I think it's quite a difficult thing to get right.
Yeah, it's funny. I spent a good bit of time in my teens and 20s part of a large scale LARPing group that did large, like everybody was part of a country, and we fought these organized battles. And mm-hmm. I had no appreciation for what it meant to be in a shield wall until I was in a freaking shield wall. And even on scale, when the clash of shields coming together is scary as hell. And I can only imagine what would have happened if they weren't foam tipped weapons and, you know, things like that. I think, you know, people don't realize this, how chaotic and how lost in tunnel visioned you get in that situation where you have no idea what's going on to the left or right of you. You know, you're just focused on what's right directly ahead of you, the opponent you're fighting at the moment. It's pretty fascinating.
That makes great sense. And again, that comes back to the whole idea of, you know, if you want to write something, you know, that's going to connect with a reader, pick a character and write what happens to them. Because that's going to be the way that's going to be most evocative, I think. I know there are quite a few, I've never done anything like that. But I know there are quite a few, or at least I know a couple of writers. I think I know Anna Stevens, and I think maybe Ed McDonald as well, if I remember rightly, do sort of I think it's called HEMA. I don't know what it stands for, but it's like medieval combat,
historic European sort of martial arts,
fight with broadswords and such.
Yeah, it's,
and I'm sure that's extremely beneficial for them when they're trying to write a fight scene, to actually know what it feels like to swing a sword like that, to know how quickly you can move, to know what it feels like to get smacked by the, you know, the flat of a broadsword or whatever. So I'm sure that's a beneficial thing when you're trying to write that stuff.
Yeah, I think it stands for historic European martial arts is what HEMA stands for. And
you know better than me.
Yeah, no. And I actually did quite a bit of, like, there's tons of great video on YouTube for any writers that are listening to this, that, or even readers that are interested in that kind of thing. The current, at least as far as I know, the current longsword world champion is a 5'6" female who can kick everybody's ass. And so I always point to her when people tell me that women can't stand up to men in an head-on combat with a sword, because I've seen her do it, and she's crazy fast and very limber, and just, you know, she can best everybody.
That's absolutely brilliant. You're right. I've read about that as well. And that actually raises a really interesting point, because one of the, believe it or not, I think it's the top review on my Amazon UK page, is somebody who, it's a 3-star review basically. And he starts by saying it's a well-written book, but, and then goes on to say that it's unrealistic and too PC because all the women can fight. It's like, what? Really? So, I mean, yes, the fact that, as you say, that the current EMA champion is a 5'6" woman is just fantastic, because people just have such a bizarre notion that women are incapable of being effective warriors in combat with men, and it's just completely wrong-headed.
Well, they don't fight the same way. They can't stand up strength to strength. You know, if we came down to a wrestling match, they'd likely lose. But with weapons where speed and cunning and, you know, and raw skill can stand up against someone, I think they certainly can hold their own, as she is proof of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, martial styles and martial skill are a massive, you know, they're the influence that's going to matter when you come head in. I mean, yes, if two people of the same skill come up against each other, if one of them is markedly stronger than the other, then sure. But equally, as you say, if one of them is markedly faster than the other, that's as much of an advantage. So, I think it's quite a limited perspective on the world and on history to find something not credible because there are female warriors in the story.
So The Lost War is book one in what you said is a planned trilogy. How are things coming on books 2 and 3? Is there a planned release date for the next book?
Funny, I was just working that out in more detail today, funny enough, because my audiobook publisher asked me about when I thought the second book would be out. And I've been saying early next year for book two. I'm about 85,000 words into it right now. I think it's going to be longer than The Lost War in the end. The Lost War was 150K. I think this is going to be maybe 180, maybe even 200, depending. We'll see. When it gets to my editor, he may tell me that there's a lot of flab in the first 80,000 words that has to come out, but I think it's going to be longer. And so looking at a realistic schedule, I'm thinking probably, it might be out a little earlier than this, but I'm thinking, to be safe, I'm going to be looking at probably June-ish next year for book two. To be safe, it might be before that, but that's realistic, I think. And then as soon as possible after that, book three, my hope is that I'll get a lot of book three written while book two's with my editor, and get a head start on that. But yeah, book three, I think will be probably at the earliest late next year, more likely early the following.
Excellent. Well, I know people always want to know what's coming around and what they can expect for the rest of the story. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned your editor, you mentioned being part of the process of talking to your audiobook producer and things like that. I noticed you said something that you have the unusual position of writing full time because a friend is funding your own together part publishing company. That must be very exciting to be part of that process.
It's an unbelievable boon, and I'm grateful for it every day, I have to say. He approached me after Carpe Diem was published, and he really loved it. He's an old friend of mine. He had the finance. He basically said, look, let's take control of this ourselves. I was with a small publisher at that time with Carpe Diem. It was originally published by a small press. He said, let's take control of this. Let's do it ourselves. I'll put up the cash and we'll make this work. And you know, he has. We've been doing it for a couple of years now. I'm hoping that by the end of the Eden trilogy being published, we'll have a pretty solid base to work from. I have promised him I will go back and write the sequel to Carpe Diem, and I have started that. I was working on it at the beginning of up until the beginning of lockdown. I was working on it, and then I just found that with all the stress of lockdown, I just couldn't write comedy. And I had to switch, and that's why I ended up switching to writing the next book in the Eden trilogy. But yes, I have promised him I will write the Carpe Diem sequel. So that's definitely the next book after I finish the Eden trilogy. But yeah, so he came to me and said, let's do this. I'm happy to invest in it. I think it'll pay off long term. Let's do it. And you know, here we are. And I'm kind of by good fortune as much as anything, living the dream.
Amazing. That's great to hear. And it sounds like your books are a ton of fun. What's next as far as reaching out to readers? If someone wants to get in touch with you, how is a good way for them to catch up with you, where they can ask you questions or just interact with you? I know readers are missing that because the cons are all shut down right now.
Yep. Yeah, I've done a couple of reading videos and things like that. I've done a couple of online con panels. But the easiest way to get in contact with me is I've got a Facebook page under Justin Lee Anderson. And I respond to anything on there. If anybody sends me a message on there or drops a line on the page, I will respond to that. I'm also on Twitter, author JLA. I'm quite a political animal, and I tend to keep my politics to Twitter generally. So if you're easily offended by political opinions, best stick to Facebook. But I am on Twitter as well. And I have my own website, which is justinleeanderson.com.
Yeah, I'm looking at your website right now. It looks fantastic. I love that arcane book or magic book or whatever it is on the front page there. Fascinating artwork. Do you have that commissioned, or is that something you were able to find in the stock site?
That's a stock image I picked up from I can't remember which site I picked it up from, but it's a stock image I picked up. It was just, I wanted something of that ilk. And I kind of had the color scheme in mind already. And so I spent some time searching for an image I liked, and that came up, and I thought, yeah, that's perfect.
You did a good job. That looks fascinating. Justin, it's great having you on the show. You know, maybe when you get book two out next year, reach out to me. I'd love to have you back on the show. I should be able to have at least been through book one by then, and we can talk about where things are going with book two and talk more about what you're working on.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the fantasy and sci-fi focus community, both on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. Also, while you're over on the website, make sure you check out each podcast episode post. You'll find links to subscribe to the show on your favorite mobile app, whether it's iOS or Android. You can even subscribe by email if you want, but you want to make sure you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. Our next guest author is the awesome and fun Eileen Muller, and you won't want to miss out on what she has to talk about. We had a great time chatting with her all the way in New Zealand. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook, either in my fan group, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, or my author page there. You can also check out my website, jamiedavisbooks.com. And if you want, you can even get a free book. Just go ahead and look for the sign-up form over on the right-hand side of the main page. Whatever you do, though, I want you to subscribe to the podcast. Come back here for the next episode. And while you're waiting, don't forget to keep your eyes open, folks, because whether you know it or not, there's magic all around you.